The world's biggest tech companies are feeling the burn of slowing smartphone sales. This is the Marketplace Morning Report live from the BBC World Service. I'm Anu Anand. Good morning. Just hours after Apple reported declining profits yesterday, Samsung this morning said its profits dropped 56% from a year ago. Technology journalist Rupert Goodwins explains what's denting growth.
There's a lack of consumer confidence because of the trade wars and a general feeling that the economy globally is in a bad place. People aren't making big expenditures so much. The smartphone market, which has driven most of the recent success at Samsung and Apple, is saturated, especially for the premium models that have had the biggest profit margins.
If the market's saturated and all the smartphone makers are struggling, then there are challenges ahead.
There are huge challenges, especially for the makers such as Apple and Samsung, who depend on the premium models. If you look at somewhere like India, for example, you're still seeing huge growth. There was something like 9% growth in the first quarter of this year alone in that market. But there, Samsung also dropped market share by about 5%. And that's because all the activities in the second tier, where you can get some really nice smartphones from China, for example, that are functionally very similar, but don't have that sort of high brand cost premium on them. So Samsung and Apple and the rest of the old school smartphone manufacturers really have to adjust their policies on who they sell to and how much they charge.
So what can these companies do to re-energize growth?
It's very difficult to know what's going to happen next to these companies. We've seen in the past companies such as Nokia, who had a complete lock on global markets in phones, just fade away completely because they couldn't make the switch to new technologies. To some extent, smartphones are a victim of their own success. They've taken over so many different technology markets and so many things are now in this one little box of tricks that any market growth is going to be elsewhere, perhaps in services. So companies that depend on selling lots of technology to consumers are going to have a very hard time of it.
Rupert Goodwins, let's do the numbers. Stocks in Asia were knocked again after President Trump suggested the Chinese government wasn't negotiating in good faith to end the trade spat. European averages are holding firm ahead of what could be the first rate cut from the Federal Reserve since the financial crisis later today. And shares of India's Coffee Day plunged 20% to a new all-time low after the body of its founder was discovered in a river. V.G. Siddhartha is largely credited with bringing coffee culture to India. Now, when you loan someone money, you expect to be paid for the risk you take. A boom in the bond market, though, has flipped that thinking upside down, and investors are actually paying for the privilege of loaning to governments like Germany and even some corporations. The BBC's Victoria Craig reports.
The market for these negative-yielding bonds has ballooned to $14 trillion this year. That's because as central banks all over the world are continuing to cut interest rates and consider buying bonds to help boost a sagging global economy, demand for those bonds rises, making yields fall. But why buy an investment that doesn't give you a bigger return than what you paid? Here's Barnaby Martin from Bank of America Merrill Lynch.
The banks are charging for the privilege of parking cash there. So perversely, if you invest in a negative yielding bond, you actually end up losing less.
In America, yields are still positive. So why doesn't a foreign investor just buy U.S. government debt? Well, the cost of doing so with a foreign currency is just too high, at least for now, according to UBS analyst Stephen Caprio.
If the Fed starts cutting rates now, it will actually make U.S. Treasury yields more attractive and, ironically, may stop European interest rates from falling much further as European investors have another outlet for their money to go into.
This topsy-turvy environment is likely to continue, analysts say, as central banks keep trying to stoke inflation and spur sluggish global growth. In London, I'm the BBC's Victoria Craig for Marketplace.
Co-living, where people share kitchens, bathrooms and lounges for social events, cleaning and meals, is taking off globally. In India, where millennials make up a third of the population, co-living is expected to be a multi-billion dollar business by 2022. The BBC's Zoe Thomas reports from Bangalore.
It's dinner time in Bangalore. And in this fifth floor kitchen overlooking the city, Shivram Garg and his fiancée Shanti Raina are just finishing their meal.
Today we are planning for a veg. So we had made that Indian dal, what we call.
And chapati. So who does most of the cooking between the two of you?
Both equally. It's not like that.
Shivram and Shanti are residents of a co-living building run by Oyo Life. They rent out a bedroom and Oyo maintains the building's shared facilities, like the kitchen, lounge and roof deck.
So I need to score.
With foosball tables, minimal deposits and apps to book rooms, co-living is a millennial twist on shared accommodation. Tanu Nayar moved in 6 months ago. when her job in Delhi relocated her to Bangalore.
If you go for a flat, you have to have a security deposit. It's not necessary. I would actually be in the city for long.
India's co-living market is expected to be worth $2 billion by 2022.
So there is a lot of bullish sentiment in the market about this sector.
That's Ujjwal Chaudhry, director of Red Seer Consulting.
It is able to provide the higher rental yields because there is a markup from the traditional rent. Increasingly, Indians are a lot more aspirational. They want to live in places which actually look like a better lifestyle.
Co-living allows investors to earn more than if they just rented out a flat. Multiple rents can be charged on one property, and young people are willing to pay more if the space seems cool. But India's market also poses challenges for investors.
If you look at the Indian market compared to a more developed market, the transparency in the system still remains fairly low.
India has one of the world's youngest populations. That's pretty clear at rush hour in Bangalore's city center. This young cohort has already put its own spin on the way we work, the way we commute, the way we communicate. Now it looks like their preferences will be shaping what we call home. In Bangalore, I'm the BBC's Zoe Thomas for Marketplace.
Finally, a tweet by an Indian actor complaining how he was charged $6 for a couple of bananas has gone viral and inspired ads from supermarkets and restaurants boasting of their own low banana prices. What's your worst overcharging experience? Tweet us at BBC World Biz. I'm Anu Anand with the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.